Hello and welcome back, beautiful people. I am so excited to be relaunching again with my podcast. And I have so many amazing people lined up in the next few weeks for you guys to listen to. The experiences and stories that people are sharing with me are just incredible. And I think it's going to be able to hold so much value for others in sharing their stories as well. And yeah, I cannot wait just to get some feedback on everything that you guys will be listening to. So I am really excited today just to introduce Tess Batchelor to you. So she is a wife. She's a mum of two beautiful boys, Max and Bobby, which are the most adorable little boys I've ever seen. And she has also actually recently started her own work and path in becoming a doula for women throughout their birth and postpartum as well. So she, in this episode, shares her experience with us basically about having two high-risk HG pregnancies and just navigating the waters of doing that as well as a young mum. And we also chat a bit about our identity and kind of finding yourself within motherhood and finding what works for you and your family and just using surrender as a pillar through your time throughout parenting as well, just because it really allows you to feel more safe and comfortable in, you know, listening to your authentic self through parenting. So yeah, let me know what you think after you guys have a listen, but I think there's so much value in this, and I really thank Tess for coming on and sharing her story, just because you know, there were so many vulnerable parts within it, and she has done an amazing job to be at the point where she is now. And yeah, so I hope you guys love it, enjoy listening, and you'll be hearing some more exciting episodes coming up very soon. So thank you and enjoy. Life is made up of seasons and shifts. It's only right that we learn life is supposed to ebb and flow, right? Everyone has their own story, so why is yours no more valid than the next person's? You are listening to Seasons and Shifts with your host, Crystal Saginski, a podcast curated to inspire and create a wholesome space where you can come to feel understood and heard through the vulnerability of storytelling. I hope through listening, you too can feel inspired to live a life that is aligned with your true, authentic self. So, Tess, firstly, I want to ask you, what current kind of season of motherhood are you currently in at the minute?
Oh, the current season that I'm in, nearly the terrible twos with Bobby, my youngest. He'll be two at the end of August, and Max has just turned four. So we never really had that with Max. Everyone would gear us up for terrible twos and tantrums and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, like, he's just a very regulated kid. Wasn't from us, it was just him. We never really had to worry about that. But Bobby has definitely made up for that. So the season, I mean, is probably just, again, just surrender and letting go, because I can't control it. I can't control what I, you know, can't control. So, yeah, just not trying to worry too much about it, going with the flow, sort of putting boundaries in where I can, but ultimately, yeah, letting Bobby just do what he needs to do and, yeah, surrender and try not to let it get to me, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, roll with it, definitely.
I'm absolutely feeling you on that right now.
Yes.
So give us a little bit of insight into you and what your life looks like currently at the minute.
So I'm Tess, for those that don't know. I'm married to Alan. We originally were from Arat and Stall, but moved to Ballarat around 3.5 years ago, just after Max was born. I used to work within a franchise. My husband did as well. We worked really crazy hours. And then, yeah, I had Max. I went back in to do a lot of crazy hours, and then stepped back from that, and then fell pregnant with Bobby. And yeah, that's led me to doula work, and that's what I do now. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah. And so how old were you when you had Max?
Oh, so I don't really talk about my age very often, because I feel like when people hear your age, there's like an assumption. So I never really talk about my age, but I was 20 when I fell pregnant with Max. Yeah, so it was not planned at all. Alan and I had only been together not even a year, so it was definitely not planned. We had so many other things we wanted to to do. And then, yeah, I was sick from like 5 minutes pregnant. I suffered from HG or hyperemesis gravidarum. And yeah, it was crazy. Like, it definitely was something that could have either made Alan or broke Alan and I. But yeah, definitely made us, because he has seen, I mean, obviously through birth and that you see everything, but my dignity felt like it was really robbed pre that. So he, yeah, he has seen everything. So yeah, I was 20, I was 21 when I had Max. And yeah.
Yeah, they're the same age as me as well. And like, it's crazy because when you say it now, I'm like, oh my God, 20 is so young. But at the time, it's like, it's crazy. Like, just in your own head as well. It's, yeah, it's such a weird experience. And so, yeah, so going into your pregnancies then, so you did have a really high risk pregnancy SERD.
Yeah, so I suffered from HG both times, probably more severely with Max, because back when I was pregnant with Max, there wasn't as lot of not a lot of research done on nausea tablets and management. Like, there's no cure or anything like that, and there's only things that can sort of take the edge off. But particularly with Max, I found it really difficult. Because yeah, there wasn't a lot of research. So what I was told was, it was ondansetron is the medication. Anyone that has HG would just know that name. And yeah, it was pretty much I could have half a tablet a day if I was sick with it. That was it. I couldn't have any more. Which 9 times out of 10, I was sick. I did all the hacks under the sun. Alan, we googled everything. Nothing worked. The one thing that I found to sort of give me a bit of relief was to have that half a tablet, put it under my tongue so it would go straight into my bloodstream. Like, it was just anything to take the edge off and as quick as possible. But by the time I come to have Bobby, there had been way more research, so I was glad to have 2 full tablets a day. So in comparison, it did like help, but I was still very sick, and having a toddler around the second time around made it really difficult. So yeah, there was pros and cons. But yeah, I had hyperemesis gravidarum, and then at 22 weeks pregnant with Max, I went for my 20-week scan, and I had been too sick to go to them because I could never keep water down for my ultrasounds or anything like that. And then yeah, I went at 22 weeks to do all the checks, and I remember like I was very tiny because I just was spewing. I was never eating, even though I attempted everything. And I remember like I'd lay in bed and like the world would just spin for me. I couldn't listen to podcasts, or they weren't even really a thing, but or watch movies or like education or read. I just felt like everything was spinning. So closing my eyes was literally what I did for like 8 months. But I remember just seeing like I had like a tiny little pocket. We knew we were having a boy, and he was very engaged, but I didn't really know much different. And I remember saying a couple of days before my scan to my GP, oh, I have been really crampy. I've been feeling like, yeah, really sore. They said, like, it's your first baby, you're 20, you're stretching, you've lost a lot of weight, that kind of thing. I was like, okay, no worries. And then, yeah, I went to my 22-week scan, and he was obviously putting on weight by that stage. And my cervix was starting to dilate and was funneling and all that kind of thing. So I ended up having to get a stitch put in. It was pretty scary. Because yeah, we were only 22 weeks, and that's not viable. Like, if we gave birth to him then, so yeah, I just felt like everything, like our world just got turned upside down. Really, it was really scary. They offered me an internal scan that day just to get a better look. You had to consent for it. I felt really uncomfortable by that, so I didn't do it. In hindsight, I ended up having like 500 of them, so like it probably wouldn't have mattered, but. At the time, I was, yeah, I felt really uneasy, and yeah, I didn't do it. And then, yeah, got called the next day. Obviously, that information got sent back to my GP. They phoned us and said, yeah, it's really scary stuff. So we need to put a stitch in, which they did. And then, yeah, we ended up traveling from Ararat every week to Ballarat, and that's who ended up looking after us and giving us our care, was through the obstetricians here.
So, and then how, at what point did you go, did you have Max then? How
Yeah,
many?
so we got Max to 37 weeks, which was amazing. Like, I'm obviously I had incredible care. But the thing with that, one, it was really hard to travel every week because I felt like I already actually get car sick if I'm not driving myself. So having high premises and the car was just like, oh, I just had all the spew bags like everywhere, so yeah, had that. But then it wasn't even that. I did get amazing care from the obstetricians here, don't get me wrong. And I have so much gratitude because my boys are here safe. But the thing I think that really stuck with me and my husband was the continuity of care. Like, we spoke to so many different obstetricians. You might see the same one for a couple of weeks and then it would be a different one. And it was, they were all lovely, but it was just not really personal. It was never really a personal experience. It was always going over the notes. And I don't know, I just, it sounds really a bit ungrateful in a sense. And it's not from that place, but it just was really hard to keep talking about. I didn't realize how draining it was.
And explain and then, over and over again as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then also every week my cervix would get checked to see if the stitch was in place. So I had so many eyes would check my cervix. And I know, like they say, you know, when you have a baby, like your dignity's gone and that kind of thing. But yeah, I definitely felt like it would have been amazing to have some sort of like just some continuity in that. Because I felt a bit uncomfortable at times, and not through any fault of them and their practice by any stretch, but it was just me at 20, I don't know. It was very vulnerable for me. So yeah, continuity would have been amazing, but I didn't really, naively, I didn't even really know my options back then. So we just sort of did what we were told in a sense. I probably could have, you know, gone and done the private obstetrician thing and just had one sole person, but I didn't even really know anything. Looking back, we were just not prepared for kids at all. And then through that, every appointment was really about Max, which was amazing because that's what we wanted to know. We had some really heavy, scary conversations. You know, you need to get to 26 weeks. We need to get to 30 weeks, 32 weeks. You know, we had like little milestones that we had to sort of try and get to. And I was put on bed rest, which I was anyway because I was so sick. So that didn't really bother me. But from a mental perspective, it was really lonely and really, the days felt like they went forever. I remember just laying there looking at the clock, felt like I just would try and sleep a lot because, which I was so tired because wasn't eating, but, and I was growing a baby, but just, I remember waking and it'd be like 2:30 and I felt like it had been like the longest day ever and Alan was still not home and I just wanted him to be home so much. And then, you know, he'd get home but he couldn't just sit at the end of the bed and talk to me forever. But that's like where my mind was at. Like, I just craved connection so much. And I was really lucky, like my mum and my mother-in-law, they would come and visit and that sort of thing. But yeah, it was just hard. It was very lonely.
And I think when you're amongst that as well in that first pregnancy, like you know you have like these kind of, you're kind of just going along with what's happening. Like, I feel like I was the same in that sense where, you know, you're kind of just going to appointments and stuff and they're telling you and you're like, okay. I remember going to the midwife appointments and they'd be like, do you have any questions? And I was like, am I supposed to? Like, it's just so
literally
overwhelming already and you're just like, okay, like, they're going to take care of this. But I completely understand how you would feel in the sense like of just having that continuity of care within going through that every time and explaining your story and stuff. Like, for me, like when I had, or even say now, like going through pregnancy, it's even when you get like different midwives and that, it's such a different feeling. Like, you might get some who are having like, you know, they might just be having an off day or so and they're not really chatty or just like, yeah, nothing comes down to it. Like, at the end of the day, where I think if you have that throughout that, but like you said, I think especially being so young at the time as well, like for me, because I would just kind of went into it, I was like, yeah, cool, okay. But it's really, I think second time around as well, you realize how much more there is that you can know, and that, you know, there's certain tests and stuff where they say, yeah, you've got to do this, 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 this kind of thing. But it's like, at the end of the day, it's your own consent to it as well. And there's so much more informed choice around it rather than first time where you're like, oh my God, like you're kind of just there for the ride.
Exactly.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we didn't, I mean, apart from the storytelling and the checking my cervix and the stitch and that kind of thing, we didn't really notice too much of a difference in seeing so many people. We did get amazing care and they were all on board and, you know, would have been talking amongst themselves. But toward the end, we'd hear, okay, so at 36 weeks, we're going to take your stitch out. At 37 weeks, we're going to take your stitch out. 38 weeks. And it got really confusing. That part was a bit stressful because we knew that there was that, you know, because my cervix was, there was like no cervix, and the only thing that was holding, you know, my baby in was the stitch, because they told us in the operate or the surgery that they could see the sac, so I had to be really careful not to prick it, otherwise they would effectively break your waters. And then, yeah, so they knew that the stitch was in a good, was holding, but it wasn't in the most ideal space because the bag of waters was, you know, down so far. So I had to be really careful that, because he was able, I suppose, to go down a bit further and engage a little bit more, putting that pressure on effectively could have sent, you know, that spontaneous labour cue. So I wanted to take the stitch out before any of that. So it was a bit confusing, like hearing that sort of stuff and then not having clarity on when it was coming out, even just little things like that, was really stressful. And I remember, like, you know, now I'm completely different, and second time around I was completely different and I was a lot more like, no, I'd like my stitch to be out at this time, blah, blah, blah. But the first time I'd sort of just give Alan a side eye and be like, and we sort of just communicate just without even communicating because we were both sort of like so scared. And I suppose I didn't want to come from a place of being ungrateful, but yeah, I've definitely come to realize that that's not being ungrateful and taking an active role in your, you know, experience is, not being ungrateful at all. But yeah, that's just, yeah, you live and you learn, I guess. You don't know what you don't know. And yeah, we had never had heard of anyone going through hyperemesis or having an incontinent cervix. So it was a first for us. It was full on.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you have, I guess, did you know many people pregnant at the same time as you, or was it
your own? No. So I had had one of my friends, she had had a baby, but yeah, and amazing. She was not unwell. And pretty straightforward pregnancy. But for me, yeah, I was literally 5 minutes pregnant and yeah, really, really sick. And I remember, like, not that I was ever really like into my weight or really any of that kind of stuff, but I remember, like, I lost 10 kilos with Max being pregnant with him. Mm-hmm. And even just, and then obviously the day I had him, so I'd lost 10 kilos. And then by the day I had Max, I, was my pre-baby weight, so I hadn't, but I was carrying mats. Yeah. And yeah, then after, yeah, so I'd lost, I think it was about 10 kilos after I'd had him. So, but I just sort of like just thought, oh, you know, I'll be fine, I'm not feeling sick anymore. But I was so depleted and I just did not lean into that at all. I was so ready to just get out and do stuff again, that I just, yeah, I did not listen to healing, or I suppose I didn't think I needed to recover because I didn't. I had a physiological birth, like a normal birth, so I didn't really think about, you know, I didn't have any trauma, physical trauma from really, but I didn't realise that inside, internally, I had a lot of healing to do and depletion. And, yeah, after falling pregnant with Bobby, it was after I had Bobby, I suffered really badly with postpartum depletion. And, yeah, I had to go see a naturopath and get like all my levels rechecked and everything. But yeah, I suppose, I don't even know where I was going with that.
I guess it just goes back into all that hindsight of it as well. Like I look back at I remember, cause I had a vaginal birth and everything. Like I remember saying to the midwife the next day, I was like, oh, like, I don't feel like I've just pushed out a baby. Like it was nuts. And then, now that I think back, Gabe was like 5 or 6 days old and I went to a cafe to go see a friend and I'm like,
literally,
oh God. Like it's like this time I'm like, I just want to sit at home and relax and like,
yes,
yeah.
And I'm literally exactly the same. We had Max on the Thursday, we come home Friday, and Alan played footy Saturday and I went to watch Alan play footy and he wasn't going to play.
Yeah.
And I said, no, go, it's fine. We lived in a little flat so close to the Oval. And I walked over, I had my pram, I was just walking the laps of the Oval. Like, I felt amazing. Like, I was felt so healthy. I was eating. I felt like I had little bits of energy from the food and stuff that I was consuming because I haven't been able to do that. And but then come the second time, I was like exactly the same. I'm like, I just want to have like a tight-knit circle. I don't want to leave the house. I just, yeah, I didn't realize, like, at the time it felt good, but then looking back, I'm like, that was so silly. I really should have relished in this newborn bubble, just in our space, and yeah, not worrying about getting ready and doing that sort of stuff. Yeah, it was exactly the same.
Yeah, and I feel like it's as well in the sense of like we say within westernized cultures, and that's it straight away goes back to that having that idea of yeah, like the sooner you're out to do this and that, and like all this is better. Whereas like once you then realize and look into it more, it's just yeah, it's definitely all to do with the hindsight of it and being like second time around. And I think for me as well, it was like this thing of like that I was already so insecure of being a young mum as such that I think that was like a massive thing that I was like, oh, like I'm in control, like I've got it down
I
fine.
was just about to say literally the same. I felt like exactly the same. I felt like it was to prove to myself, like, I've got it, I can do this, and to prove to other people that I can do it as well. It wasn't, yeah, it was, yeah, exactly the same. I was just trying to, I think, just give myself some confidence that I can do this. And if I get that validation from other people, in a sense, I don't know, like going to the footy 2 days postpartum. And everyone asking, like, "Hey, you coping?" I'm like, "Yeah, good."
And you're
Like,
like,
I
oh,
don't know.
had a baby. Yeah, it's definitely
Yeah.
that validation. And then you're like, okay, yeah, cool, I can do this. But it's like at the end of the day, like still being so young as well, like you're still in that phase of looking for that external validation of that. So yeah.
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 And so into I guess motherhood as such, then moving forward. Did you I know that we've kind of had a few conversations as well before about matrescence and just with to do with identity within motherhood. How has that kind of been with you in your
Yeah.
experience?
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, I worked, was always a really hard worker and did lots of hours. And I mean, I was only 19, 20. So, I come out of school and just worked and saved. And I bought a house really early. And then Al and I wanted to build a house. So, it was just always, money's always been a big thing for me, just making sure I've been secure. I didn't grow up from having heaps of money. My dad was a shearer. So, was always, he literally earned what he worked. It was none of this like $20 an hour or $30 an hour. He literally earned what he did. So that always stuck with me, and just to really work hard. And just to, yeah, have security was just massive for me. So yeah, I worked really hard. And then after I had Max, and I actually had to take, I had about, I'd never had a sick day. I think I had 20 weeks off work with Max because I was so unwell. And then when I was allowed to go back, I ended up having to like go on sort of light duties and yeah, just took it day by day. But after I had Max, I had for the 4 months, I think I had 5 months maternity leave because I chewed into so much of my own personal leave that I was going to use for maternity leave. And then I got the 4 months from the government. After I did that, Alan had, we were still living in Ararat waiting for our house to be built. And Alan got a job in Ballarat, got the opportunity and just had to take it at the time. So he was travelling, and then I got a job at the same place as Alan did. And we were travelling together. We had my mum helping out, Alan's mum helping out, but Max was 5 months old. And yeah, I went straight back into working full time. It was about 60 hours a week. It was literally mental. But I think looking back, it was such a, it was, I think I was so scared to just explore who Tess as a mum was. I think I just, yeah, I didn't really, I had so much time off in my pregnancy and I just missed people and I felt like I wasn't, for me, not from anyone else, but I felt like I wasn't bringing in enough. Yeah, I think I had a lot of work to do on my mindset and my beliefs, I think. So yeah, after I did that for about a year. It just was not sustainable. It was so difficult. And I just felt like I was missing out a lot on Max growing up. And I hated it. And I just couldn't physically do the hours anymore. As well, I think that was a lot to do with my postpartum depletion. I was just seriously exhausted all the time. So I made the decision to step down and just worked casually for a little bit, fell pregnant with Bobby, and, yeah, went around HG again. But, yeah, my postpartum and how I did it with Bobby was completely different with Max, and I felt so much more like a confident mum because I'd actually, like, just, I suppose, let go of, not completely let go, but let go of what I knew myself as before I had Max, because it just wasn't, I couldn't do everything. I couldn't juggle at all. And that was a big thing for me because, like I said, money was such a priority for me and having security. I've only ever been was a workaholic. That was a really big thing for me to stop doing or to.
A massive part of your family, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, and I really identified myself with that managerial role that I had, and it was really hard to have that hat plus a wife hat plus a mum hat, and I couldn't, and I just kept thinking, like, how can I would seriously try and nut out, like, how I can get it to work. Like, I would sit down and I would, like, I'm a pen to paper kind of person, and I'd be like, if I'm more organized in this bit, like, then that'll give me a bit of more time here. Like, I was just times, like, I would just clock watch all the time to try and see where I can just gain time. I don't, it's so silly now, looking back, but that was where I was mentally. And I was just really, I really struggled with, yeah, letting go of that, or just saying, look, put pause on that for a minute, enjoy this time while I can, work will always be there. And it's funny and ironic that, like, financially we're completely fine and I've got no worries, we're fine, but I don't think it was actually the financial stuff. I think it was the identity part, but I clung to the financial bit out of that, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I really struggled to get to where I am now. I ended up doing a 12-month confidence course. It was more than that. It was like looking at your mindset, looking at your beliefs, looking at your values, all of that. And that was massive. I really enjoyed it. It was hard at times, but it was really interesting to see where I've got, like, where my beliefs come from and just how that controlled my day-to-day choices and that sort of thing. Yeah, so that was really interesting. But yeah, I feel like I'm in a really good place now, but it's definitely taken time and investing in myself and making myself a priority, because it's not easy.
Yeah. Especially I, like, going from one and then two as well on top of that. And who did you do the confidence course through? Was it to someone you
so
on Instagram or?
So she was just on Instagram. Her name is Erica Kramer. I think it's called the Queen of Confidence. I just did like a webinar one day. It was like a free thing. I was like, oh, I just want to check it out, have a look. And I really, because there's a lot of people out there, but I really resonated with her approach to it. And I don't know, I just felt like, yeah, I understood how she translated everything, because I'm not really real woo-woo, I guess. Like, I like practical stuff, and she would be able to break down some of that spirituality stuff into that kind of language for me to understand. And I really enjoyed that. And yeah, it was 12 months. There was times where I just dipped in and dipped out. But yeah, it was really good. It's got at people pleasing, overthinking. I was such a candidate for all of that. So yeah, it really helped me to let go. And I think that's why I'm also a better mum come Bobby. If Bobby was on my first, I think I would have really struggled with, yeah, what people would have thought and that kind of thing. But I've just learnt to just let it go, and that we're all just doing the best that we can do. And but I think having that confidence course, that helped me to get to that place as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, because I know for me, like, identity has been a massive thing, and I was very similar in the sense of, like, before I'd had Gabe at the time and he wasn't planned either, it was just like I was like constantly working. Like, I'd like work like full weekends at a bar and then work throughout the week doing everything else. And like, then going from that to then surrendering to be like, okay, like, knowing that you being a mum
is enough value in itself as well. And like just trying to, yeah, put that belief into your own thought process of that as well. And when you're stripped back from everything else and you're sitting at home with, you know, a 1 or 2 year old or whatever, a newborn, and like you said, like I'd like a thing that's come up for me lately massively, I think, has been confidence. Because I feel like before I had Gabe, I was always a really confident person, and then like I'd recently noticed in the last say year and a bit or so, I'd just like outside of like home life, I was like, oh, like I don't know what it was. It was just like I was more anxious towards certain things and just really feeling like, oh, like me beforehand, I would go into this being like, oh my God, this high like energy kind of thing. Whereas like now sometimes it's like, I think when you're by yourself for that long, you end up like putting this doubt on yourself in a way as well. Because yeah, like you said, like it's just like all these external things removed that it's just like, okay, who am I as a person? And it was like, I guess for a lot of people as well, even with lockdown as such, like people like not having jobs or doing their usual things, it's just, yeah, gravitating back towards that, finding your authentic self within that and going, okay, actually, who is that? How do I find them? How do I get back to that? So yeah, that would have been awesome, I reckon, doing that course in just going back to those basics of that all.
Yeah.
So yeah, and so like in regards to you parenting now, do you feel like that is very different in regards to when you were growing up, or have you taken, you know, bits and pieces, I guess, as well?
Yeah, I'm a different mum to how my mum was with me, but there's still elements of us. Like my kids have the best bond with my mum and Alan's mum, but with my mum, I do see like little things that she does with them, and they're similar, and even in the way we speak we're quite similar. But with my brother, he had some learning difficulties. It was back before, like, you know, autism and all of that stuff that we know now was around, so my mum had a lot of stress in regards to that. So yeah, she ended up putting a lot of like, I can see it as a mum now, actually, absolutely. She put a lot of her energy into him, and just, I suppose she went through a whole process of, for a long time, she thought that he was just naughty, or, you know, but he was just really, he didn't know how to communicate his feelings and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I suppose because of that, I'm really aware of like balancing my time, because I felt like sometimes I was just always, even though I was the bigger, you know, sibling or the older sibling, I felt like I had to be older very much, very quick. Yeah. Just trying to alleviate pressure, and even just things when I was younger, like I was never the partier or anything like that, because I didn't even want to have to bother like them trying to get me from A to B, and just little things like that. I just didn't even, they had so much that they were trying to do with him. And yeah, it was, like I said, it was not very known, so it was a lot of pediatrician appointments, and that was down here, and yeah, it was just crazy. So I parent different in aspects, but then yeah, in some, I think like that was the only model I've had, so I do parent in ways very similar to mum sometimes. But I think from doing my confidence course and looking at my own values and what's important to me and Alan as well, like our parenting style and what, yeah, is important to us, I think we've come to a place now where very much individual what we do, and we're sort of take bits and pieces, but not we're very like confident in what we do and our choices. But for a while there, like I remember the early days, like we would just ask our mums, what do we do here, what do we do there, and like, you know, they'd give us, I suppose, answers or guidance, which was amazing because that's what we were after. But yeah, we probably should have just been more confident in just, or, you know, more comfortable with being uncomfortable, that we don't know what we're doing, but we've got to learn it somehow, and that's okay. That you learn as you go, I suppose.
And I think
just to trust that.
Yeah, like just like understanding that at the time is like, because obviously we all know that beforehand, like before you have a baby, everyone gives you advice and ideas and things and all that, but it's really coming into it and coming into that confidence and learning itself either way. Like I feel like for me and Jackson, like we'd kind of had like some like mutual understanding of what we wanted to a partial basis, but like at the same time as well, it was still like we weren't like, I wasn't 21 going, okay, so what parenting style, like, do you think like this or that? Or, and like at the end of the day, everyone is going to do what works for them in their own way. I think like as well, it's, you know, you can read or hear certain things, but you're going to take bits of what works for you and your family either way, which I think is really important. So there's no particular right or wrong way. But yeah, I feel like we were similar in the sense of just like that first kind of, especially year and a bit or so, was like I feel like it's just like survival, that point. Like you're just like, okay, I'm just feeding them, I'm getting them happy, or like they're happy, they're playing, they're doing this, and you're getting through those basics of it. And then like now I've realized in probably like the last, say, 6 months or so, like once you get more into like tantrums and like more bigger emotions and stuff with them, then it's like, okay, how am I gonna like, how am I gonna approach this as such? Because, you know, for me, like growing up, it's like your parents do what they know is best at the end of the day, and they, you know, the intention over the impact of it is two different things versus either way. But I think, yeah, it's like once you get kind of more into it and then you start questioning, you're like, oh, I can actually respond a different way when my kid's having a tantrum. I can either sit there and like even now I'll still do it, like sometimes where it's like that if they're doing something they shouldn't, you like instinctively and you're like, don't, like, but then after that I'm like, actually no, you just like, you don't even know what's going on right now, you're trying to work through this. So it's just being that support there, and just, yeah, like, like I'm so grateful how much information we have in this day and age.
Yeah, I agree. And like my mum, she's an early childhood educator, so she's incredible with kids, she's always down at their level. And so I did have all that, so I love that I've been able, that sort of pieces that I've taken. But I'm the same, there were still moments, you know, especially when there was all that period of not knowing what was going on with my brother and that sort of stuff, where I suppose it would just get to, I remember hearing like, well, that's because I'm telling you to do it, or, you know, because, yeah, like mum knows best or dad knows best kind of thing. And that was just from what they had learned. And there's elements of that from us sometimes, like when my kids are just crazy or I've got a lot that I'm trying to do, and I can hear myself doing that as well. But something that I've just really been trying to listen or hear lately or remind myself lately is like, I'm trying my best and they are too. So, and their best isn't always going to be amazing, you know, it's just, it is what it is. Yeah, it looks different, and there's, yeah, variations of normal every single day. Like, just because they're like one, you know, one way one day doesn't mean they are going to be the following day either. So just trying to remind myself of that. But yeah, I'm grateful that we have heaps of information as well. I follow quite a few parenting pages on Instagram, and even just hearing like, instead of saying this and flipping it to this, and yeah, just knowing that even when I read that, like, that feels better. Like, I know that that would make them feel better, actually saying that to them in those vulnerable times. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. And so I wanted to touch a bit more into your work now as well. So could you explain kind of that path of going down into being a doula?
Yeah, so with Max, when I was pregnant with him, I had never heard of a doula. I literally didn't even know that they were a thing. All that I knew from like hearing from other women and some friends or family friends was that, you know, you'd see a midwife and then you'd have your baby with the midwife there and that kind of thing. And then obviously I had obstetricians and a team of them because of the stitch. So I didn't even have midwifery care throughout my pregnancy. I had them through my birth, and my births were probably the most empowering and like moment of my life, absolutely. But from my whole experience, like from end to end, pregnancy to postpartum, that was probably the bit that was the most straightforward, I suppose. Because yeah, I got my stitch out and bang, Max was here the following morning. It was really like quite textbook to what they thought. So all went really well. And then when I had was pregnant with Bobby, it was like 2 days before I had my stitch was due to come out, I'd come across what a doula was, and I was like, oh my God, that would be so amazing. Like, I really wish I had have known about this, you know, a month or two ago, and I would have definitely invested into that. Like, 100% could see the value in that. So I got my stitch out 2 days later, and Bobby actually held on for 2 weeks, which was crazy. And I think that was, they think as well, because I got the stitch put in so much earlier, like it was a planned thing. So I probably still could have reached out and, you know, organised postpartum care, but I didn't really understand the whole concept.
Yeah.
Had Bobby, it was really empowering once again, felt amazing, absolutely loved my birth. And then, yeah, it was probably like, I don't know, 2 weeks after I had him, 3 weeks after, I was like, nah, I just could not stop thinking about birth work or in that sort of thing. And pre-kids, like I didn't even want to be in a hospital. Not that I work for a hospital, but I didn't want to be a nurse or anything like that. And so, yeah, I actually looked into midwifery because I was like, yeah, I still wasn't really too sure on what a doula was. And I just didn't align for me. Plus, logistically here, I couldn't do it for a few more years. And I was like, oh, I really just felt like I needed to scratch an itch that I, you know, had right then and there. And then, yeah, I found a doula course and I was like, oh, I'll just do it. And again, for me, money is a huge thing. So I think, yeah, however much it was, I was like, I can't do that. And Alan's like, okay, it's just do it. If you do it and you like it, that's awesome. Just do it. It's fine. So I did, I invested in it and it was the best thing I ever did. I absolutely loved it. And then I kind of went down the rabbit hole once you sort of get started and you're following people or you see, come across a lot more. So I did that. And yeah, I have recently only launched because of lockdown and COVID and just didn't feel like, yeah, the right time with all the uncertainty. But yeah, I've just launched. There's so many different types of doulas. So you can, you know, there's ones from fertility all the way to end of life, pregnancy, postpartum and birth. For me, I'm pregnancy, birth and postpartum. So it's really important for me for that continuity. And that's really where I drew that inspiration from my own experiences was to have that continuity and having that foundation together, working really closely in the pregnancy so that we can have, yeah, solid foundations and bond and trust and connection. So then when we are in birth, when you are feeling vulnerable and postpartum, when you're feeling vulnerable, you know, you can be open and honest and not feel, you know, any sort of judgment. You know how I work and how I operate. And, yeah, there's that safety, you know, that feeling. So that's how I work. And, yeah, I absolutely, it genuinely lights me up. I absolutely love it. Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah. And so have you, you obviously haven't done any births yet then?
No. So I haven't done any births yet. What I had done originally with my packages, I had intertwined everything together and then with COVID and then we went into the second lockdown. I was like, God, are we ever going to get out of this? Like, so I ended up separating my birth support package or labor and birth support. So that is its own thing. And then just makes it a little bit easier because again, with the whole money thing for me, it's massive that if anyone invests into my services and into me that I am providing, like I would just feel awful if I couldn't do that. So it just makes me feel a lot more comfortable being able to, you know, we can, you know, there's no lines of blurred sort of thing. But yeah, my births, I've got some mums, August, September, October, and then yeah, finding out about November, which is amazing. And then I've got some postpartum care in there as well. Again, I don't typically just do postpartum care, but they're birthing at a private hospital that isn't offering, haven't lifted any restrictions. So, but we've met and we've connected through pregnancy. So they feel comfy for me to be part of the postpartum, which has been really lovely. So yeah, I've got some beautiful families I'm working with and yeah, I just love seeing how empowered they become because yeah, often at the beginning when we start working together, they're all happy and really excited. And then it gets to a point when they think, oh my God, like, how am I going to get this baby out? And then, yeah, just seeing that they can feel empowered and their partner to feel empowered to support them and draw on resources and tools and things like that is definitely one of the biggest highs for me is just knowing that, yeah, they feel prepared and ready, which is the best.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome as well. Like, then it gives you that kind of sense of then I think the partner being more a part of it as well, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, beforehand, like I know for like me and Jackson, probably when we had Gabe, it was Like, you know, he was still coming along to appointments and stuff, but I think it's like, you think in the sense of like, we barely knew anything going through pregnancy as women. And then it's like, you know, men don't go and sit down and like go have a chat on the weekend at soccer and go, oh yeah, this is happening in birth and like blah, 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 and all this stuff. So I can imagine that would be so good to have that extra support there as well for them as such. Yeah. And just kind of, yeah, work as that team together. So that would be so good.
Yeah.
And yeah. So in regards to say, if someone is like potentially thinking about looking into getting a doula, is there like any specific like kind of timing or cutoff of like when they should or like?
No, I don't think so. Like, I mean, the earlier that you can, you know, look into it, the better, because then you have got that, you know, more time to connect and to, you know, build that relationship.
Yeah.
But there is no too early or too late, really. It's just at the end of the day, like, doulas are very flexible and very adaptable and they're to support you no matter what. So there is no early or late, but yeah, I definitely, for me, it's really important that we have that relationship building time, because I know what it's like to, you know, have children and to be vulnerable, and I would want to have someone that I've created that safe connection with, to be as open and honest as possible and not feel like I have to hide anything. So for me, I know that I would need time to be able to get to that point. So it's really important for me to be able to do that. But, and also another thing with that, there's so many different doulas out there. And the thing with us is that we're not hired by anyone except you. So we all have our own individual philosophy and we all have our own individual packages we've created and just our own, you know, makeup and nature. Yeah. So it's really important to find someone that you're aligned with, because at the end of the day, like, you want to be open and honest, and they're going to be, for me, I'm there from pregnancy to postpartum. So you don't want to have someone that you haven't connected with hanging around, in a sense.
Yeah.
You want to, yeah, have that bond. So really making sure that, you know, asking questions, giving them a little bit of background of you, not too much. Obviously, you want to, if you don't feel connected, you don't want to tell people your life story, but giving them a little bit to work with so that they can then see if they fit for you as well. It's really important that you, yeah, take the time to find the right match. Not really worrying too much about, you know, when to hire the person, but just to have that enough time to be able to actually seek the right person.
Yeah, and build that personal kind of relationship as well.
Yeah.
And so kind of to finish up as well, what are some of your, I guess, into your postpartum care, kind of what are some of your priorities within that?
Yeah, so for me, I do hours of support, not visits. So a lot of doulas will do like two prenatal visits, two postpartum visits. For me, it was really important knowing that you just never know what you need. It's very like, you know, day by day in those early days, particularly. It was really important to do hours of care. So I have 8, 12 and 16 hours in my packages. So it could be simply, you know, can you just run in, grab some milk, grab some bread, run out. Also, come around while you're here, I'm just going to have a shower and, you know, do X, Y, Z. Can you mind the new baby, and can you do, you know, clean up the kitchen or tidy up this or whatever it might be? And then that might be an hour of work. So then you're still getting 7 hours of work. And then you might say, can you actually come and do a 3-hour stint, because we're really struggling. We've had like a really rough couple of nights of sleep. Mum might go and have a sleep. I might wear babe and we might go and be a team together and do some bits and pieces. It could be, you know, for you as an example with Gabe, it might be you and Jackson having some time with your new bub, and I'm taking the time to spend with Gabe so that he's not feeling left out and he's able to transition as well. Because it's, even though I'm very much mother-centered care is a big part of my philosophy, I know as a mum that your heart, you know, especially at the beginning, to feel like to divide it. So knowing that someone is taking care of that is actually such a compliment and such a, you know, it's so good. So that could be what it could be. Meals is massive. So taking pressure off with food. I have an amazing woman here, Sal. She cooks some beautiful food from Nourished Cafe. It's all fresh, so you can freeze it if you need to, and then you can pour it out when you want. In a couple of my packages, it's like 5 to 7 days worth of meals that you don't have to worry about, so you can just be in your bubble and transition. I have prenatal massage, postnatal massage. I work with a really beautiful woman, Sarah, as well. So that sort of gives you a bit of you time, snacks, and just even just that, like, that's all practical stuff. And then also just from an emotional perspective, just debriefing and looking at things that can just help you with your oxytocin. And, you know, you hear about oxytocin all in birth, but it's so important, you know, for bonding and for, you know, for your nutrition and just the feel-good hormone after you've had your baby as well. So looking at little things that we can do to, you know, give that a bit of a spike. So it could be as simple as sitting out in the sun, having a cuppa, or, you know, going and having a bath, having your massage, or just putting on a TV show and watching that, watching Friends or whatever it is that gives you a laugh, and or rest, whatever it is. So just looking at that kind of stuff so that you are feeling mentally okay as well, and debriefing your journey. Or it could even, you know, when you're in birth or when you're giving, having your baby, you're not always thinking. So there's a lot of, there can be a lot of patches that are a bit blurred, and having someone there, your partner or me, to be able to sort of fill in the gaps as well. Like, it's actually such a beautiful thing to talk about and just go, oh, I didn't realize that was, that's where that happened. I sort of lost track of time, and being able to sort of piece things together, it's actually so beautiful and such a, so invaluable, I think. So
yeah. Yeah, just even the aftercare of it as well, I think, is so, so important. And there's so much, I'm really glad that I think nowadays more as well, there's a lot more focus. Like, there's like so much work within westernized culture, I think, that we need to do, like, post-birth, yeah, the mother as such, because, you know, at the end of the day, the baby's going to be fine. Like, the baby's going to get
absolutely
everything. But yeah, just that postpartum experience afterwards is so important. So yeah, if you had any advice to give to someone who was about to become a new mum, what would it be?
I think it would be just to do you, just know that you're enough, to trust your intuition. So, you know, if you have any questions, you know, that you're asking externally, what's your gut telling you as the answer? Really listening to that, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to be right. And I think, and just prioritizing, yeah, yourself as well. Like, it's really easy to get, you know, scooped up in the all about baby, but really making sure that you take time for you. And if you can put the plans in place ahead of time, you know, it might not be a doula, that might not be your thing, and that's totally fine. But it might be scheduling your mum to come twice a week for 4 hours at a time, or, you know, your mother-in-law and tag teaming, or whatever it could be. So just making sure that you're getting in enough adequate rest, and also just pockets of you time to recollate yourself, and just to, you know, not be just all about focused on baby, but also focusing on your own health. Because yeah, you might not notice it in the first year or two, but, you know, after a few years of mothering, it can really catch up with you. So just making sure that, yeah, you're taking time for you, and putting your health first as well as bub.
Yeah, I think that's massive, because, you know, at the end of the day, like, that's just important in the sense of making sure that you fill your own cup before you can, you know, like,
absolutely.
Like, once I'd realized that, like, later on, I think Gabe started daycare around a year or so, and when he'd had that day, I just felt so much better throughout the week afterwards, because I was like, I can actually, like, you know, turn up better and more present rather than feeling depleted throughout the week and not having that extra support there. And then, yeah, going into it feeling such a better mum and so much more relieved in that sense as well. So yeah, I love that. Yeah. That's so good. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I think this is going to be so valuable to so many people. And yeah, you are doing amazing work. So.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I feel really grateful, and yeah, it was so nice to talk to you.
Awesome. Thanks, Jess.